And so we're going to read Song of Songs together and reflect on it using some of these thoughts we've talked about regarding Scripture and the Word of God. And just see what both the letter of the book says to us, and then discern the Spirit, what God might be saying to us through that letter in our community today. So, what I'd like to do is this. Every single commentary I read, I mean this literally, 100% of them, all say, if you're going to study the Song of Songs, the very first thing you need to do, of course, is read the entire thing. You need to read it in one sitting, and you need to read it out loud. Every commentary says that. So, I would like us to read the Song of Songs out loud today. It'll take just a minute. It's not the longest book in the world, but it's longer than, you know, the passages we'll have during service today. So it'll take just a minute. And the idea here is just for us to hear the whole thing before we comment on it at all, to presume we know what we're talking about when we talk about it. Because truth be told, we don't read the Song of Songs very often, right? It doesn't show up in the lectionary. We don't study it very often. It wasn't a course we taught at Cascade. You know, it's like, it's not on our list of things we normally read. So, yeah, and it's, you know, it's a love poem. And so, there's that too. Okay, so anyway, we're going to read it without commentary, except for these few notes, just to orient us a little bit, but nothing to, like, prescribe how you're supposed to hear it. So let me give you just a few notes before we begin. One, be prepared to know the Song of Songs, it is, of course, as I'm sure you've read before, it is a love poem, or maybe even a set of poems. It's uncertain whether it's a collection or just a single poem, but it doesn't matter. It's a poem. And so it's formatted like poetry is. So there's lots of couplets, even triplets. That's primarily what it is, couplets and triplets. Every once in a while, there's four lines that go together or one line by itself. But it's couplets and triplets all throughout. Also, you need to know as you enter into the Song of Songs, it's entirely a dialogue. The whole thing is just a dialogue between a lover, the beloved, and then there's two, probably, maybe just one, but maybe two choruses that interject every once in a while. It's neither the voice of the lover or the beloved, these unnamed characters. It's a chorus that's chiming in. And there's probably two of them, and they chime in every once in a while. So you need to know that sort of the flow of things as we read it here. And then, just as a reminder... That's just Bob in the background. It's just par for the course. I imagine 18-year-old Bob was doing the same thing, sitting at Cascade in the back of class. Yeah. The fact that he's sitting by Chris is probably problematic. Chris is blaming Bob, but I don't. I mean, come on, Chris. And then Veda, like any, you know, wife would do, just is like this. Yep, I married that guy. I chose to marry that guy. Okay. Another thing you need to know about the Song of Songs, it's going to use language that is unfamiliar to us. You know, the metaphors, the similes, they're not the ones we would use today. So be prepared for that, so that you're not overly distracted by them. But the fact is, some of the language is just going to be strange to us in our current setting. It just doesn't match the language that they would use. For example, there's a line that for us will stand out, right? When we talk about someone who hasn't reached puberty yet, we have a way to describe that. They say, we have a little sister who has no breasts. You know, that's what they say to describe a woman, a girl who hasn't reached puberty yet. We don't say that. And so it's awkward for us, right? It's a little strange for us to speak in that way. So just be prepared. The language is, of course, it's different from the way we would talk nowadays. But we're going to read that out loud anyway. We're going to read the whole thing, and we're going to see what we see and hear what we hear and then see what the Spirit might say to us. So today is just orientation. We're going to read it. We're going to share our initial impressions. I'll give just a little bit of background, and then starting next week, we'll just read a chapter at a time. Read it out loud and see what the letter says and see what the Spirit says through those letters. I added, in the reading that we'll do, I put space breaks in the poem. Most translations do that. You just need to know those space breaks are best guesses. Usually, a space break in between, like, the end of one speaker and the start of another, like if it switches, but it doesn't tell you, here's the lover talking, now here's the beloved talking. It doesn't tell you, you just have to sort of guess. So there are space breaks to help with that, or space breaks in between, you know, two separate poems, but it's all guesses. You know, we don't know for sure. So just beware of that. And then some of the words, this is mostly the NRSV that we'll be following, but honestly, some of the words, scholars don't even know what they mean. So you just have to guess. And so there is some guesses. So if you follow a different translation, it might read a little bit differently, which is good and helpful, actually, because then you can see the alternative options. But again, we don't always know what the words mean. And the Hebrew text versus the Greek text, which is older, versus the Latin text, which is newer, they don't agree. So, you know, it's just hard to figure out exactly what all the lines of this poem are saying. So we'll do best guesses here based on what scholars have taught us. So, okay, I think that's enough. Let's hear the whole poem together, okay? I'm just going to read it. You can follow along on the screen. Feel free to follow along on your phone or whatever if you want to, whatever is best for you. Again, this is NRSV with, you know, some alterations here and there. And let's sort of hear what this says and see our initial impressions. Can we do it? Let's give it a try. All right. The Song of Songs, which is Solomon's. Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth. For your love is better than wine. Your anointing oils are fragrant. Your name is perfume poured out. Therefore, the maidens love you. Draw me after you. Let us make haste. The king has brought me into his chambers. We will exult and rejoice in you. We will extol your love more than wine. Rightly do they love you. I am black and beautiful, O daughters of Jerusalem, like the tents of Kedar, like the curtains of Solomon. Do not gaze at me because I am dark, because the sun has gazed on me. My mother's sons were angry with me. They made me keeper of the vineyards, but my own vineyard I have not kept. Tell me, you whom my soul loves, where you pasture your flock, where you make it lie down at noon. For why should I be like one who is veiled beside the flocks of your companions? If you do not know, O fairest among women, follow the tracks of the flock and pasture your kids beside the shepherd's tents. I compare you to a mare on Pharaoh's chariots. Your cheeks are comely with ornaments, your neck with strings of jewels. We will make you ornaments of gold studded with silver. While the king was on his couch, my nard gave forth its fragrance. My beloved is to me a bag of myrrh that lies between my breasts. My beloved is to me a cluster of henna blossoms in the vineyards of En-Gedi. Ah, you are beautiful, my love. Ah, you are beautiful. Your eyes are doves. Ah, you are beautiful, my beloved. Truly lovely. Our couch is green. The beams of our house are cedar. Our rafters are pine. I am a rose of Sharon, a lily of the valleys. As a lily among brambles, so is my love among maidens. As an apple tree among the trees of the wood, so is my beloved among young men. With great delight I sat in his shadow, and his fruit was sweet to my taste. He brought me to the banqueting house, and his intention toward me was love. Sustain me with raisins, refresh me with apples, for I am faint with love. Oh, that his left hand were under my head, and that his right hand embraced me. I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, by the gazelles or the wild does, do not stir up or awaken love, until it is ready. The voice of my beloved, look, here he comes, leaping upon the mountains, bounding over the hills. My beloved is like a gazelle or a young stag. Look, there he stands behind our wall, gazing in at the windows, looking through the lattice. My beloved speaks and says to me, arise, my love, my fair one, and come away. For now the winter is past, the rain is over and gone, the flowers appear on the earth, the time of singing has come, and the voice of the turtle dove is heard in our land. The fig tree puts forth its figs, and the vines are in blossom, they give forth fragrance. Arise, my love, my fair one, and come away. O my dove, in the clefts of the rock, in the covert of the cliff, let me see your face. Let me hear your voice, for your voice is sweet and your face is lovely. Catch us the foxes, the little foxes, that ruin the vineyards, for our vineyards are in blossom. My beloved is mine and I am his. He pastures his flock among the lilies until the day breathes and the shadows flee. Turn, my beloved, be like a gazelle or a young stag on the cleft mountains. Upon my bed at night, I sought him whom my soul loves. I sought him but found him not. I called him, but he gave no answer. I will rise now and go to the city, in the streets and in the squares. I will seek him whom my soul loves. I sought him, but found him not. The sentinels found me as they went about in the city. Have you seen him whom my soul loves? Scarcely had I passed them when I found him whom my soul loves. I held him and would not let him go until I brought him into my mother's house and into the chamber of her that conceived me. I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, by the gazelles or the wild does, do not stir up or awaken love until it is ready. What is that coming up from the wilderness like a column of smoke, perfumed with myrrh and frankincense, with all the fragrant powders of the merchant? Look, it is the litter of Solomon. Around it are 60 men of the mighty men of Israel, all equipped with swords and experts in war, each with his sword at his thigh because of alarms by night. King Solomon made himself a palanquin from the wood of Lebanon. He made its posts of silver, its back of gold, its seat of purple. Its interior was inlaid with love. Daughters of Jerusalem, come out. Look, O daughters of Zion, at King Solomon, at the crown which his mother crowned him on the day of his wedding, on the day of the gladness of his heart. How beautiful you are, my love. How very beautiful. Your eyes are doves behind your veil. Your hair is like a flock of goats moving down the slopes of Gilead. Your teeth are like a flock of shorn ewes that have come up from the washing, all of which bear twins, and not one among them is bereaved. Your lips are like a crimson thread, and your mouth is lovely. Your cheeks are like halves of a pomegranate behind your veil. Your neck is like the Tower of David built in courses. On it hang 1,000 bucklers, all of them shields of warriors. Your two breasts are like two fawns, twins of a gazelle that feed among the lilies. Until the day breathes and the shadows flee, I will hasten to the mountain of myrrh and the hill of frankincense. You are altogether beautiful, my love. There is no flaw in you. Come with me from Lebanon, my bride. Come with me from Lebanon. Depart from the peak of Amana, from the peak of Senir and Hermon, from the dens of lions, from the mountains of leopards. You have ravished my heart, my sister, my bride. You have ravished my heart with a glance of your eyes, with one jewel of your necklace. How sweet is your love, my sister, my bride. How much better is your love than wine, and the fragrance of your oils than any spice. Your lips distill nectar, my bride. Honey and milk are under your tongue. The scent of your garments is like the scent of Lebanon. A garden locked is my sister, my bride. A garden locked, a fountain sealed. Your limbs are an orchard of pomegranates with all choicest fruits, henna with nard, nard and saffron, calamus and cinnamon, with all trees of frankincense, myrrh and aloes, with all chief spices, a garden fountain, a well of living water, and flowing streams from Lebanon. Awake, O north wind, and come, O south wind, blow upon my garden that its fragrance may be wafted abroad. Let my beloved come to his garden that he may eat its choicest fruits. I come to my garden, my sister, my bride. I gather my myrrh and my spice. I eat my honeycomb with my honey. I drink my wine with my milk. Eat, friends, drink, and be drunk with love. I was sleeping, but my heart was awake. Listen, my beloved is knocking. Open to me, my sister, my love, my dove, my perfect one, for my head is wet with dew, my locks with the drops of the night. I had put off my garment, how could I put it on again? I had bathed my feet, how could I soil them? My beloved thrust his hand in the opening, and my inmost being yearned for him. I arose to open to my beloved, and my hands dripped with myrrh, my fingers with liquid myrrh upon the handles of the bolt. I opened to my beloved, but my beloved had turned away and was gone. My soul failed me when he spoke. I sought him, but did not find him. I called him, but he gave no answer. Making their rounds in the city, the sentinels found me. They beat me. They wounded me. They took away my mantle, those sentinels of the walls. I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, if you find my beloved, tell him this. I am faint with love. What is your beloved more than another beloved, O fairest among women? What is your beloved more than another beloved that you thus charge us? My beloved is all radiant and ruddy, distinguished among 10,000. His head is the finest gold. His locks are wavy, black as a raven. His eyes are like doves beside springs of water, bathed in milk, fitly set. His cheeks are like beads of spices, yielding fragrance. His lips are lilies, dripping liquid myrrh. His arms are rounded gold, set with jewels. His body is an ivory panel decorated with sapphires. His legs are alabaster columns set upon bases of gold. His appearance is like Lebanon, choice as the cedars. His speech is most sweet, and he is altogether desirable. This is my beloved, and this is my friend, O daughters of Jerusalem. Where has your beloved gone, O fairest among women? Which way has your beloved turned that we may seek him with you? My beloved has gone down to his garden, to the beds of spices, to pasture his flock in the gardens and to gather lilies. I am my beloved's, and my beloved is mine. He pastures his flock among the lilies. You are beautiful as Tirzah, my love, comely as Jerusalem, terrible as an army with banners. Turn away your eyes from me, for they overwhelm me. Your hair is like a flock of goats moving down the slopes of Gilead. Your teeth are like a flock of ewes. They have come up from the washing. All of them bear twins, and not one among them is bereaved. Your cheeks are like halves of a pomegranate behind your veil. There are 60 queens and 80 concubines and maidens without number. My dove, my perfect one, is the only one, the darling of her mother, flawless to her who bore her. The maidens saw her and called her happy. The queens and concubines praised her. Who is this that looks forth like the dawn, fair as the moon, bright as the sun, terrible as an army with banners? I went down to the nut orchard to look at the blossoms of the valley, to see whether the vines had budded, whether the pomegranates were in bloom. Before I was aware, my desire set me in a chariot beside my prince. Return, return, O Shulamite, return, return, that we may look upon you. Why should you look upon the Shulamite as upon a dance before two armies? How graceful are your feet in sandals, O queenly maiden. Your rounded thighs are like jewels, the work of a master hand. Your navel is a rounded bowl. May it never lack mixed wine. Your belly is a heap of wheat encircled with lilies. Your two breasts are like two fawns, twins of a gazelle. Your neck is like an ivory tower. Your eyes are pools in Heshbon by the gate of Bath-Rabim. Your nose is like a tower of Lebanon overlooking Damascus. Your head crowns you like Carmel, and your flowing locks are like purple. A king is held captive in the tresses. How fair and pleasant you are, O loved one, delectable maiden. You are stately as a palm tree, and your breasts are like its clusters. I said, I will climb the palm tree and lay hold of its branches. O, may your breasts be like clusters of the vine, and the scent of your breath like apples, and your kisses like the best wine that goes down smoothly, gliding over lips and teeth. I am my beloved's, and his desire is for me. Come, my beloved, let us go forth into the fields and lodge in the villages. Let us go out early to the vineyards. Let us see whether the vines have budded, whether the grape blossoms have opened and the pomegranates are in bloom. There I will give you my love. The mandrakes give forth fragrance, and over our doors are all choice fruits, new as well as old, which I have laid up for you, O my beloved. Oh, that you were like a brother to me who nursed at my mother's breast. If I met you outside, I would kiss you and no one would despise me. I would lead you and bring you into my mother's house and into the chamber of the one who bore me. I would give you spiced wine to drink from the juice of my pomegranates. Oh, that his left hand were under my head and that his right hand embrace me. I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, do not stir up or awaken love until it is ready. Who is that coming up from the wilderness, leaning upon her beloved? Under the apple tree, I awakened you. There, your mother was in labor with you. There, she who bore you was in labor. Set me as a seal upon your heart, as a seal upon your arm, for love is strong as death, passion fierce as the grave. Its flashes are flashes of fire, a raging flame. Many waters cannot quench love, neither can floods drown it. If one offered for love all the wealth of one's house, it would be utterly scorned. We have a little sister, and she has no breasts. What shall we do for our sister on the day when she is spoken for? If she is a wall, we will build upon her a battlement of silver. But if she is a door, we will enclose her with boards of cedar. I was a wall, and my breasts were like towers. Then I was in his eyes as one who brings peace. Solomon had a vineyard at Baal Hamon. He entrusted the vineyard to keepers. Each one was to bring for its fruit 1,000 pieces of silver. My vineyard, my very own, is for myself. You, O Solomon, may have 1,000 and the keepers of the fruit 200. O you who dwell in the gardens, my companions are listening for your voice. Let me hear it. Make haste, my beloved, and be like a gazelle or a young stag upon the mountain of spices. Okay. Well, there you have it. Over 10 minutes, the entire Song of Songs in one reading for you. There's much to say about this book. It's incredible. It is incredible. It's incredible that it's in our scripture. It's an incredible love poem. But before we get to all that, let's start with this. What are your initial impressions and observations? We'll go through everything carefully over the next few weeks. But now, just initially, having heard 8 chapters read aloud, having heard this dialogue going back and forth, what stood out to you? What are some initial impressions you have so far? Let's just share them out loud as opposed to just with one another. Let's just share them out loud and see what we've got. So, Jeff and then Kevin.
So, what stood out to me was, do not stir up or awaken love until it is ready.
Uh-huh. Yeah. 3 times we hear it. The 3rd time it's said slightly differently, but 3 times we hear it throughout the song. Kevin?
Well, I was impressed with all the similes, metaphors
is like a stallion, or all those comparisons.
Right.
Were very prominent.
Yeah, striking. And over and over and over, much like poetry, you would expect to have similes and metaphors and analogies all throughout, and it does. And when we begin to ask ourselves, what are we hearing, it will be, I think, exciting and intriguing to discover what we hear through all of those images. Good. Who else? Initial impressions. Linda?
I knew I couldn't keep up with your reading, so I just grabbed whatever came to my head.
Uh-huh.
And I remembered my first thought was, who are these people?
Uh-huh.
And the comment, my sister, my bride.
Yeah.
And how she got outside. And why were they beating her? I mean, yeah. Obviously she was a defenseless person. And who, and at the end, when, closer to the end, when she was saying she wishes that he had been born of her mother. Mm. So it's like that sister-brother thing again. So
right.
That was kept repeating itself.
Right,
too.
Yes. And then we get later on, we have a little sister. And, you know, we get much of that language. It's really intriguing, that familial language there. And the question, which is a good one, who are these people, is intriguing. Because the answer is, we don't know. We simply do not know. I'll say more about that in just a moment. And then the sentinels, the first time the sentinels are really helpful. The second time they're absolutely unhelpful. What is happening there? We'll have to explore that further. Marty?
The use of fruits over and over.
Right, yeah.
I know, I think Diana had pomegranates in her arm and it refers to fertility. And it's mentioned, pomegranates are mentioned 4 or 5 times.
Yeah, multiple times,
book.
Right.
The other thing I
Along
might
with
say,
apples and figs and all those other fruits, but yeah.
When my daughter was, I think, in about the 5th or 6th grade, someplace right along there, there was a gal that was coming to church here. And I'm not going to say her name. Everybody knows who she is probably. But
yeah.
She taught a class on sex education.
Mm, right.
And she pretty much used this book.
She did, you know, yes. Yeah. Well, as we go through the chapters, we will ask ourselves both about what is the letter saying, what is the Spirit saying through the letter? And then what are we learning about sexuality in general? You know, we'll explore some of that. You reminded me of a time at Cascade, Bill. I don't know if you remember this, but I was leading chapel and I was having Chris Miller, if you guys know Chris Miller, I was having him read a section of Song of Songs, and it was just an innocuous section. It just had something to do with whatever I was talking about that day. And I don't know if it was my fault or if you know Chris Miller, if it was him who did it, but he read the most provocative section of the Song of Songs out loud to everybody and looked at me like, what, that wasn't what you wanted me to read? And then sat down, and it was a memorable moment. Oh. Okay, others, initial impressions. Yeah, Noland.
Well, first I feel like I need a cigarette after that.
But, yeah.
Second, there's a lot, reading it in its entirety like that, there's this found and lost and found and lost. There's a separation and a coming together constant.
Right.
That, and, you know, it was, as an aside, you know, growing up, it was always, this was my favorite one to get to because of when we're reading through the Bible, because of how uncomfortable it made everybody,
yeah.
All the old people around me.
Right.
And I just found it hilarious, and then it was always, well, it's about Jesus, and it's about the church, and they would just move on.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's not about Jesus. And the church. But, there's something about the whole human experience of it. This is the one that covers everything, right?
Uh-huh.
This is touch and taste and smell, and, you know, it's very relying on those sensory, pleasurable sensory sensors of,
yes,
of relationship, right? Because again, a relationship has these kind of ebbs and flows, and things are good, you know, sentinels are good one time and they're terrible the next.
Right.
You do things without shame, or you say, I don't care what other people think, or I want other people to see this, or I, you know, they find themselves just transported, like all of a sudden I'm out again in this chariot and I was going here, and, you know, it's just this being so in love with that idea of the relationship, the space the other person takes, or that entity, that relationship takes in your mind, is very descriptive, very, very real in a lot of ways that a lot, you know, and it's very applicable, I think, to a lot of the, you know, the whole, the idea of a salvation,
yeah,
idea coming through this, right? It's like,
right,
if we're doing the thing, okay, what's it say about Jesus?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, there is this level of that interaction, that it's like it's not clear, but it comes and goes and hits you in weird ways, just like love does. And, you know, it's just very, it's very beautiful in that, but this is just, you know, that's why it keeps repeating the same things, I think, just to bring up that same kind of imagery of like, no, this is really good. Like, hold on to this.
Yeah.
That kind of ideas.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. It's funny to think that we're now the old ones, and now how can we receive it? we're the old ones we giggled about. Now, how will we receive it as we hear this? But yeah, that's great about the... you know, that narrative arc, that up and down, that does seem to match both a life and a love experience and a salvation story. You know, that up and down seems pretty clear. And also, as you're highlighting in the first and foremost thing that you said there, this is absolutely a focus on embodiment. You just cannot get around embodiment in the way sometimes religious people try to. This doesn't allow you to, for sure. Melinda.
So it's interesting. You know, when you started, I was like, okay, I'm looking at the words and trying to be very intellectual. And then finally, I just had to close my eyes and just listen.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it made me think of camping this week with Julian. It was just a time where it was just him and I talking. And I don't even remember how it came up, but he was asking me about the Puritans and early on in America. And I was reflecting on that as listening to this. And it just really, really just hit home how much we bring that Puritan mindset when we're coming into reading scripture, and how that is not the mindset that they had when they were writing it. It was sexual. The Bible is sexual. The Bible is sensual in all senses, like Nolan said. And we want to parson it out, and we want to make it clean and tidy, and we want to take that away from God. And God is sensual in all of the senses, and that's not a dirty thing. And we've got to stop thinking of it as dirty. When God created the senses, all of it, smell, taste, touch, all of it.
Right.
And yeah. It just is so, like, why are we uncomfortable? Like, when I closed my eyes and just listened and could take that kind of icky, like, I'm going to be uncomfortable, it is beautiful. And comforting, and made me feel warm and fuzzy. It made me feel like I just had this blanket wrapped around me. And I'm like, how sad that we've had to, that we are uncomfortable with that side of God, with that side of that we want to make everything not feel. You know, we can't have emotions about it. We can't feel the feelings. And the feelings are as much about, as much God in us as all the other stuff. And so that's just what kept coming to my mind is this is beautiful, and this is absolutely an aspect of God and who God is, and how sad it is that we have tried to strip that when other communities and other countries and other things don't have the same mentality around the senses and sensuality and sexuality. We have gotten it wrong for so long.
Yeah, it is interesting to think that Song of Songs is essentially saying, here is how you will know God through these senses. So that it's intriguing. Again, the embodiment part that we'll come back to time and again. Thanks for those comments. And in fact, they remind me of a statement from Bernard of Clairvaux that I want to share with you. But after Bill.
Julie mentioned, out of all the concubines, is this the one?
Mm.
Is it a wife?
Right.
And... Right. Yeah, and I think it also, a little bit what Melinda said, it touches on kind of the core of creation. I mean, we're made this way.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah.
And it's called good, and this is really leaning into that, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great thought. And there's that wonderful moment late in the poem. Again, we'll come back to this later, but there's this wonderful moment late in the poem where he says, you know, Solomon has all these things. He can keep his. I have mine. That's what I long for. You know, it's a powerful moment. Warren or Wendy? Okay, Wendy. And then let me sum up with a few thoughts.
Yeah. Okay, I heard about, this very small amount before I had figured out their Enneagram numbers, and that their love language was words of affirmation.
Yeah.
And they're kind of a perfect match.
Right, right.
Because they're both doing that. But then I remembered that I took this class at Florida College. Mm. It was taught by Homer Haley. I don't know if you guys know who that is, but I wanted to take everything I could. I thought I was only going to get to go a year. And so I had like an upper division class, and this was it. And it was like 6:30 in the morning.
Oh, wow.
And when I got there, it was just all guys who were going to be preachers.
Uh-huh.
And John said, "What do you remember about it?" And I went, "I have no memory of it, except for that it wasn't this. It was like an allegory."
Uh-huh.
Is how he approached
right.
it.
Right.
Which I thought was like torturing that beautiful poetry. Uh-huh. So I can remember feeling that way, but it is just pure beauty. It right. is. It's just a beautiful poem. And even though they kind of ran out of new things to say about each other,
yeah.
they kind of repeated near the end.
Yeah. Did I mention you're like a gazelle? Yeah.
Yes. And how about a pomegranate?
Yeah. That's good. Okay, thanks. Well, let me start with this. We'll see if this works. Okay, here's Bernard Clairvaux, an 11th century theologian and mystic. Here is his advice on how to read the Song of Songs. He says, "In this song, it is affections, not words, that are to be considered. Why is this? Except that the holy love, which is the subject of the entire song, cannot be expressed by words or language, but only in deed and truth. Here, love speaks everywhere. If anyone desires to grasp these writings, let them love." Nolan, will you help me with that? Next slide. "For anyone who does not love, it is vain to listen to this song of love or to read it. For a cold heart cannot catch fire from its eloquence. The one who does not know Greek cannot understand Greek, nor can one ignorant of Latin understand another speaking in Latin. So too, the language of love will be meaningless jangle, like sounding brass or tinkling cymbal, to anyone who does not love." It's interesting, as we approach this, as we enter into studying, you know, what is the letter in the background and all that, and then what is the Spirit saying? Perhaps most importantly, what we can do is commit ourselves to love. You have to be in that space to hear these words. The mystics used to say that beginners should just stick with Proverbs. Just stay in Proverbs, like where we're at in our readings right now. When you get a little more mature and you're somewhere a little more wise, a little more experienced, maybe then move into Ecclesiastes and you should be fine. Keep reading Proverbs and maybe Ecclesiastes. But only the absolute experts should ever turn to Song of Songs. In other words, he was saying, the mystics were saying, you have to be committed to love. You have to lean fully into it, or this is just going to be too much for you. So bear that in mind as we read it. I'll say a few things next week about introductory stuff, who wrote it, why they wrote it, when. I mean, I'll say what we don't know about all that stuff, who the author is. I'll say a little bit more about how it's organized and all of that stuff. But let me end with these two things. One is a blessing for reading the Song of Songs. As we enter into it, I hope this blessing is helpful for us. And then a prayer for reading it. And then we'll end just with the Song of Songs words itself. So, Nolan, the next slide. This is from Origen, 3rd century theologian. And this is just a blessing for reading the Song of Songs before we even begin. "Blessed is the one who enters holy places, but much more blessed is the one who enters the Holy of Holies. Likewise, blessed is the one who knows holy songs and sings them, but much more blessed is the one who sings the Song of Songs." And then a prayer, next slide, a prayer for the Song of Songs. This is from Williams. It's meant to be singular. William of St. Thierry, 12th century theologian and mystic. "We call upon you, O Spirit of Holiness. We ask you to fill us with your love, O love, so that we may understand love's song, so that we too may be made in some degree participants in the dialogue of the holy bridegroom and the bride, and so that what we read about may come to pass within us." And perhaps most importantly of all, we'll just end with words from Song of Songs 5:1. Eat, friend, drink. Drink deeply of love. That's where we're headed. All right. Thanks, everyone. We will see you next week as we continue on.